Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis. I'm the host of the ABC's podcast Politics Now, where I'm joined by the sharpest political journalists at the ABC to bring you the big stories you need to know.
You'll hear analysis of the week that was in politics with me, Fran Kelly, joining PK for the party room.
And on Insiders on Background, join me, David Spears, as I zoom in on one big story and a key voice behind it, diving deeper into the policies, laws and people shaping our landscape.
All in the Politics Now feed. Search Politics Now on ABC Listen and hit follow so you never miss an episode.
From Wurundjeri Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap.
One Nation recording a primary vote of 31%, Labor 28%. Coalition 20. This is almost like a standard poll after an unpopular budget, except that the shine that's coming off Labor is going to One Nation instead of the Coalition.
So according to the polls, Pauline Hanson is now the country's most popular political leader, leading the most popular political party. She's outpacing Labor and the Coalition. So with his party under fire, we're going to hear from the new president of the Liberal Party. You may just recognise his voice.
I'm not going to get too excited by a poll, but obviously our country is in trouble.
Former Prime Minister Tony Abbott is coming up. Then overseas, as Israel expands its invasion of Lebanon, it's also looking to grow its grip on Gaza.
I think that's a very dangerous announcement and move.
That UN expert will explain what they're anticipating. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Well, it is good to be back with you for another week of The Breakfast Wrap. We woke up this morning to some pretty significant political news. Polling out overnight showing that Pauline Hanson's One Nation has overtaken Labor to become the most popular political party in the country. The polling comes from Redbridge Group and Accent Research. It was published in the AFR late last night. And it all comes right as the former Liberal Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, takes over as his party's federal president. Now, before we get stuck into the challenge that he faces, I'm going to let our political correspondent, Tom Crowley, explain the numbers in this polling.
This is almost like a standard poll after an unpopular budget, except that the shine that's coming off Labor is going to One Nation instead of the Coalition. It's quite remarkable in that sense. One Nation recording a primary vote of 31% in the Redbridge AFR Accent poll, Labor 28%. Coalition 20, and the One Nation holding up with 49% of the two-party preferred vote against Labor as well. Anthony Albanese and Jim Chalmers have had some shine taken off them. The approval ratings for the budget are dreadful. 51% of millennials, the target of the budget, say that they think it will be bad for them personally. So the government is aware that it's having some trouble selling this budget, and that's, I suppose, in that sense, no surprise. Pretty bad for the Liberals as well, on a weekend that they've turned to Tony, who gave, you heard a little bit of it at the beginning of the show, what sounded really like a political stump speech, more than you would normally expect from a party president. His return is not an accident. It's a direct attempt to try and reclaim that vote from One Nation, but they're a long way behind One Nation, ahead of the Coalition in the assessment of the voters in this poll on managing the cost of living. Not economic management, though, so the Coalition, a lot of work to do.
And that was Tom Crowley there. Now, before we hear from Tony Abbott, we actually heard from his party's shadow treasurer, Tim Wilson, and I just want to play you a few minutes of what he had to say about this One Nation polling, because it kind of shows you the Liberal Party's attitude right now. Here is Sally's first question to Tim Wilson.
According to this new Redbridge poll published last night, the Coalition has a primary vote of just 20%. That puts you a distant third and closer to the Greens than One Nation. Are you now a minor party in waiting?
That's cute. We're a political party that's focused on building out a story and a vision for the future of Australia. What Australians are right now is despairing of the state of this government. I understand why. We have a Prime Minister who's betrayed the community, who has broken a series of promises, and people are, you know, in despair and desperate for change. We need to be better and make sure that we clearly communicate to the Australian community what we're going to do. But I'm absolutely convinced that not just we will be here in the next parliament, but we will go on to win.
If there is so much ill feeling towards this government, why are those voters not coming to you?
Well, I think there's a chunk of voters who are just going to the orange paddock of despair because there's a lot of noise and attention there, but we need to actually make it clear where we want to take the country. And one of the things I've said consistently is the self-starters of the nation, the small businesses of the nation, desperately need hope. Small business is economic hope lived out in communities. And we've got to back them in hard to make sure they're part of the success of the country. Instead, the Prime Minister's solution is to punch down at them.
Former Prime Minister Tony Abbott has been selected as the Liberal Party's new president. He's declared that the Liberals are under new management. Let's take a quick listen.
Our job is to lead a people's revolt to be rid of the worst government in living memory. I promise you, we are under new management. We are hungry to win for our country's sake.
Is Tony Abbott the answer right now?
Well, actually, Angus Taylor is the answer right now because he is the parliamentary leader of the Liberal Party. Most people couldn't tell you who the presidents, federal presidents, are of political parties, Liberal or Labor. Well, they can now, and maybe they knew them in the past, but most people don't, because it's the job of the parliamentary party to make the case and to build out the vision for the future of the country and persuade voters to make sure that they understand that their life is going to be better under what we offer.
Given that Mr. Abbott lost his own seat to an independent, do you think he understands how to appeal to inner city voters who choose independents in some cases rather than Liberal candidates at the last election?
Well, he's the only person who's ever won a seat off a Teal before, and I can say it's the job of the parliamentary party to make the case for policy, not the job of the federal president. His job is administrative, and I fully respect that role, and you need somebody to do that role.
In your view, would it be better if Tony Abbott is sticking more to that administrative role and leaving the policy and public commentary more to Angus Taylor? Is that what you mean?
That's fully what I expect to occur, because that's the role that Angus Taylor has. As leader of the parliamentary Liberal Party, he is the political leader and works and with the Shadow Cabinet, of course, and colleagues to make sure that we're developing out the policy and making the case for the future of the country.
Are you confident that Tony Abbott understands that demarcation that you've described?
I'm absolutely confident that's the case.
Shadow Treasurer Tim Wilson there. Well, let's hear from Tony Abbott, the former Liberal Party Prime Minister turned federal Liberal President. Sally asked him straight off the bat for his response to this polling that is putting One Nation far ahead of the coalition.
Well, I'm not going to get too excited by a poll, but obviously our country is in trouble. Our economy is stagnant. Our society is fragmenting. Our security is imperiled. And yes, we don't believe in ourselves nearly enough. I think the current government is making all of this worse. And it's really important that we get a better government as soon as possible. And my job as the incoming Liberal Party president will be to try to ensure that the organisation is in place, the members, the candidates, the funding, to make Angus Taylor the Prime Minister, the 32nd Prime Minister, because history proves that it's the Liberal National Coalition that is the best and strongest alternative government.
When you're looking at the current situation, do you see your role as president of the Liberal Party as someone who is front-facing, delivering this message that you're talking about to the public?
Look, I don't expect to be in the media every day. But on the other hand, I do think that my presence now in this senior role will demonstrate to people who might have been sceptical that the Liberal Party is fair dinkum about abolishing net zero, fair dinkum about cutting back mass migration, fair dinkum about scrapping taxes, because my government was actually very good at that. And my presence, I think, is an indicator that the Liberal Party hasn't forgotten how to be a very, very good government.
So you see this, there will be some, not in the media every day, as you're saying, Mr. Abbott, but there will be some public facing to this role rather than it just being an administrative role?
Look, the party president is the organisational leader, not the political leader. But
I don't think there's ever been a party president who's taken a vow of silence, and I'm certainly not going to start.
Outgoing federal director of the Liberal Party, Andrew Hirst, said at the party conference over the weekend that One Nation were not friends of the Liberal Party. Do you agree?
Look, all of us express things slightly differently. Obviously, we are in a degree of competition with other parties and voices on the centre-right. But in the end, our opponent, our enemy, if you like, is a really bad Labor government, a really bad Green-left Labor government, which in its budget assault on aspiration and wealth creation, I think is, frankly, un-Australian, absolutely un-Australian, because part of the Australian dream has always been to be able to get ahead and keep most of what you have created for yourself and not have it confiscated by an extortionate government. And that's what Anthony Albanese is now doing.
Angus Taylor has outlined his own plans in response to the federal budget, but this new poll suggests the Coalition's primary voters slipped even further and the Liberal and National parties are now a distant third to Labor and One Nation. If this wasn't the moment where the Coalition's fortunes started to turn around, what do you think it will take?
Look, it will take hard work. What we need now is more members, good candidates, better and more effective fundraising. And the point I make is if you normally vote Liberal, if you're interested in public life, if you think our country is in trouble, please don't complain on the sidelines. Join the party and make a difference, because we are still by far the most credible alternative government in this country.
What are Liberal values right now? How would you articulate them?
Well, as I said over the weekend, we're the Freedom Party, we're the Tradition Party, but above all else, we're the Patriot Party. We cherish freedom. We want taxes to be lower, government to be smaller, citizens to be stronger. We're the Tradition Party. We respect institutions that have stood the test of time. We support the family and small business. But above all else, Liberals think that Australia is the best country on earth and we want to keep it that way. And that's why I think it's so humiliating for our nation when the Prime Minister can't do a public event without standing in front of three flags, not the one national flag that represents us all, and can't open his mouth without suggesting that some Australians are more worthy of acknowledgement than others. And I just think this is wrong.
What do you mean by that?
I think it's got to change. Well, what I mean is that Australia belongs to all of us, not just to some of us. And if you're starting a speech, I think you should acknowledge everyone.
Rather than an acknowledgement of country, is that what you mean?
That's it.
You're the first former Prime Minister to assume the presidency of the Liberal Party. Is this a relaunch of your political career in some way?
No, absolutely not. I'm only doing this. There are lots of other things that I could do with my time. I'm only doing this because I think our country is in a bad way and I think our party needs to revive if our country is to improve. And my mission, my absolute mission, is do everything I reasonably can to ensure that Angus Taylor becomes the 32nd Prime Minister.
And that is the new Liberal Party President, Tony Abbott, there. He was speaking with Sally Sara on Radio National Breakfast. We're going to leave federal politics for a moment and look overseas, because Israel are in the headlines for a couple reasons today. Firstly, Israeli forces are pushing deeper into southern Lebanon. That has prompted return rocket and drone attacks from Hezbollah. The IDF yesterday captured this strategically significant Crusader-era castle. It last held it during its previous invasion of Lebanon 26 years ago. It's not just symbolically significant, but also marks a major expansion of Israel's invasion of Lebanon beyond the Litani River.
I instructed the IDF to expand the maneuver in Lebanon. Our forces crossed the Litani. They seized controlled areas. They occupied Beaufort Ridge. And now my instructions is to deepen and expand our grip on the places that were under Hezbollah's control.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu there. Meanwhile, he's also announced plans to take control of almost three quarters of Gaza's territory. He wants to increase the IDF's hold from 60 to 70% of the enclave. So what would the impact of that be? The head of the UN Human Rights Office in the occupied Palestinian territory is Ajit Sunghay, and he's preparing to navigate this very situation. We spoke to him first thing this morning, and he said that if Israel follows through on its plans, it'll have devastating consequences.
I think that's a very dangerous announcement and move. One of the first reactions would be we have to take it seriously. Everything that the Prime Minister of Israel has said has come true. They have acted on what they have said, and that's something we should take very seriously. But also, we have to see this against the backdrop of how the IDF has moved from physically taking over 54% of Gaza, pushing it further westwards into 60%, and now Netanyahu is saying it has to go further to 70%. So that's a very serious move.
We know that the humanitarian situation in Gaza is already dire. Will conditions get worse if Israel expands its deployment?
Absolutely. I think this is going to have a significant and severe impact on the people and also on the operations. What are we looking at? If this comes true, we're looking at people being displaced, thousands of people being displaced westwards, again towards the sea. Where do they go? We're talking about 2.2 million people, again, crammed in about 30% of Gaza Strip, which was already one of the densest part of the world. And then mass displacement also means, you know, uprooting our operations. We have been in this situation in the past. It'll significantly impede our response, humanitarian response. We have to move our offices, our staff. Many hospitals will have to be vacated, moved to different places, makeshift camps. Water points which are beyond this 30% of the land will be difficult to access. It'll be interesting to see what the Israeli Defense Force will do, because generally they tend to take over what is called as the Netzarim corridor, which separates North Gaza from rest of Gaza. If they do that, then we are talking about dividing Gaza again into two big parts, which is Gaza City and rest of it. And that'll have a major impact on movement and access, and hence the humanitarian response.
In what way? What are you most concerned about if that division is put in place?
It won't be a free access for us to reach Gaza City. And every time we have to reach that place, we'll have to ask for permission from the Israeli Defense Force. We have been in this situation before. We get constant rejections. We can expect thousands of people still remaining in Gaza City, which means we have to reach that place to provide food, water, sanitation, medicines, and so forth. And that'll deplete fast. And if we are talking about people moving further and further into small places, we can also expect community violence. Let's not forget there are many armed groups beyond Hamas that are backed by the Israeli Defense Force. They might become active. We can expect another catastrophic situation.
What's the situation in the areas in Gaza that are under Israeli control right now?
It's very difficult to say. There are few people there. There are some armed groups that have access to such places. What we know is demolitions continue. And this is pretty dangerous because we know thousands of people who are missing are buried under some of these rubbles. And according to international law, there is a serious obligation on Israel and everyone else to make sure that there is a safe and a decent way of burying these dead bodies.
And that is the head of the UN Human Rights Office in the occupied Palestinian territory, Ajit Sunghay. Right, we are going to end today with some federal politics, because the federal government is now touting second hand for part of one of the most significant defence deals in a generation. As part of the $370 billion AUKUS deal, the initial plan was for Australia to receive two second-hand Virginia-class submarines and then one new one. But now, the US will supply Australia with three second-hand Virginia-class subs. Canberra says it'll save us money and it'll actually be easier for the Navy to operate. The announcement came on the sidelines of the Shangri-La dialogue in Singapore on the weekend, where AUKUS nations also announced a new signature project to develop cutting-edge weapon systems and also sensors for underwater drones. We wanted to unpack that and this announcement from the federal government. Michael Shoebridge is the Director of Strategic Analysis Australia. He's also a former deputy in the Australian Signals Directorate and the Defence Intelligence Organisation. Sally asked him what he made of this move towards increasing our supply of second-hand submarines.
It's bad news. What it shows us is the Americans are really struggling with their own submarine building and their fleet numbers. They're keeping their newest, most capable submarines for themselves, and that means we're now going to get all used submarines.
We've had a text message through this morning saying, so more second-hand subs, still at full price or discounted? Important to know.
Well, I would love to know that. The Virginias cost about $4 billion US dollars each, if you look at the total program cost. I would be delighted to hear we've driven a good deal and got them cheaper, but I suspect we've driven a very bad deal.
What does this signal about the capability gaps for the US, do you think?
Well, it shows they've got an enormous challenge, and China is outbuilding all three AUKUS nations with nuclear submarines now. They've just doubled their production capacity, and their latest Type 95 submarine is a very capable submarine. So the AUKUS nations are really getting further behind the curve rather than shifting the military balance in our region.
What's the problem with the production line and schedules in the US? Why have they been struggling to meet those deadlines?
Well, they've tossed billions of dollars in to try and change the picture, but the problem is the big US companies that make these submarines depend on thousands of tiny little mum and dad subcontractors, and they find it very hard just to double production.
The Defence Minister, Richard Marles, we were talking about cost earlier, says Australia will make significant savings under this AUKUS shift, but we don't know the amount?
I find that very hard to believe. These things are eye-wateringly expensive, and older submarines are usually more costly and difficult to maintain than newer submarines. Remember, AUKUS, we're meant to be maintaining all different kinds of US Virginia submarines in Stirling at the Henderson Maritime Precinct. Why does it matter what flag is on the boat?
The attention of the United States has been firmly on the Middle East and South America in recent months. Is there any indication that attention, strategic and defence attention, is returning to the Pacific from the US?
I don't think so. I mean, the Iran war still hasn't finished. And remember, the US National Security Strategy said the Western Hemisphere is their absolute priority, except for the war in the Middle East. But they're also conducting continued military operations in South America. America's weakened in our part of the world because of its mass consumption of munitions and missiles in Iran.
Michael, the US, UK and Australia also unveiled a new project under what's known as Pillar 2 of AUKUS to develop new weapon systems and sensors for underwater drones. Is that a natural starting point for Pillar 2? There has been some criticism that Pillar 2 has been very slow to get up to the kind of massive development that was hoped.
It's very, very slow. So 5 years on, we've had an algorithm fitted to some surveillance aircraft, the P-8s, and now we hear the start of payloads for underwater vessels. Unfortunately, our Navy doesn't actually operate any large underwater vessels at the moment. It's got some on order, those ghost sharks. But to give you an idea of proportion and how small this announcement is, the UK Defence Minister said they were putting in £150 million into this program. That's about $280 million. Just this year alone on AUKUS, Australia is spending $5.4 billion, 20 times that amount in 1 year.
And that was Michael Shoebridge there, the Director of Strategic Analysis Australia, and importantly, the former Deputy of the Australian Signals Directorate and the Defence Intelligence Organisation. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. All of those interviews were produced by the Radio National Breakfast team, and Oscar Coleman produced today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow.